we're not always dealing with people in the world that are like us.
Well, that's true too.
Yeah, you know, I mean, not everyone is as civilized as we are in the Western world. You know, I'm trying to think, you look at Europe, like the last few wars that have actually happened in Europe have been in like Bosnia, Herzegovina, things like that. They were wars for independence. There's not a lot of wars out there right now that are being fought between two first world nations.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. Well, I guess one of the things that we had talked about, the history of war, and obviously you have a family that has been involved in the military for quite some time. Was your father, I know he was a colonel, did you say?
No, my father retired as a major.
As a major.
Yeah, my grandfather retired as a colonel.
I see. Did they see combat?
My mom's dad, my grandfather, Ted Willis, he actually led a platoon of Marines in mm-hmm. Korea.
Wow.
And then led a battalion of Marines in Vietnam, received 3 Purple Hearts and a Silver Star.
Holy cow.
Yeah, oh yeah, he's kind of a little bit of a war hero.
A little bit, I'd say.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so are you.
Well, I mean, so here's the difference between my grandfather and I, right? My grandfather led a battalion of Marines through combat. You know, I think that my heroism, which I don't argue anymore, but my heroism is coming home.
Yeah.
And all that I've accomplished since coming home.
Right.
You know, I don't think anything I did downrange makes me a hero necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I do readily admit that I went forth and I did it when 99% of America doesn't.
Right.
You know, so that sets me aside. But in all reality, I've come to grips with this whole hero world, the word that I am not too keen on. But I do realize that, yeah, since I came home, hell, I made a hell of a recovery. And
yeah.
I pulled my trash together. And, yeah, that's a bit heroic.
I was thinking about, we had seen each other last week or the week before. Pause for Patriots has now decided that they're going to train dogs specifically for returning service people, men and women,
yeah.
PTSD, different things. And, mm-hmm. you know, one of the things that I hear mentioned about you every time is that your distinction, quote unquote, is that you are the first service member to lose both eyes in the conflict in Iraq.
I'm actually the first U.S. service member to lose both eyes in the entire global war on terror.
Oh, yeah, I should have said that, in the global war on terror. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's both Afghanistan and Iraq.
Yeah. Okay, I see.
It's
yeah, that makes sense.
Not just Iraq. Yeah, right. So, I mean, I'm the first one to lose both eyes since we went into Afghanistan in 2001.
You know, and I don't mean to be too personal with you because obviously we're talking on the radio, but I mean, that distinction, how does that make you feel?
I've never really actually given it that much thought.
Really?
You know, yeah. So it makes me unique.
It does. But, you know, it's one of those things you almost don't want to be unique for.
Well, so I've never really been caught up on the whole blind part.
Uh-huh.
The most difficult thing it causes in my life now is transportation. I can't get in a car and drive around.
Right.
You know, so I'm asking for rides or using taxi cabs, or I love Uber, you know, stuff like that. But other than that, with the adaptive technology that's available in the world today,
mm-hmm.
my life's not really limited. I mean, I use an iPhone, I use a laptop. I've got all sorts of talking gadgets that help me with, like, prescription medicine bottles,
mm-hmm.
identifying the color of my clothing. I even have a barcode scanner.
Wow.
It's got, so it's called IDMate, and it scans UPC codes, and it has something like 16 million UPC codes pre-programmed into it. I know, so think about this, right? Imagine this. You open up your pantry, and you have a shelf with all your canned goods in it, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's easy to just look at the labels and see what's in the canned goods.
Mm-hmm.
But for a blind person, every can is the same. Same
exactly.
size, all of that stuff. But I can just flip on my IDMate and just swipe the UPC code, and it's going to tell me what it is. Say with a box of, like, macaroni and cheese. All right. You swipe the UPC code. Not only will it tell you what it is, but then you can scroll through and it will give you the cooking instructions.
I
right
really didn't realize that things had come that far.
Yeah, well, they have. I mean, it's amazing. And that's one of the reasons why the whole blind thing hasn't. I mean, I'm not going to say it hasn't affected me, because it obviously has affected me, my friends, my family, all
sure.
of that. But it hasn't limited me. You know, I went back to college. I got through college as a visually impaired student, as a blind student. harder in the beginning, trying to get used to being in a scholastic environment with the complications of not being able to see. But that got easier the more I went through it. And just, I think life has gotten easier for me the more I've gotten through it. The more experience I get under my belt, and this rings true for anybody, Mimi, you know that.
I think so.
The more experience you get under your belt, the easier things become, because you have this drawer or toolbox that you can open up of experiences and draw from, and helps you make decisions going forward in your life.
Well, when you made the decision, though, to go to war, this decision, was it based on something you specifically wanted to do, or was it because of the history of the men in your family? At this point, the men in your family.
To be blatantly honest with you, my life was in a position where I didn't like my life anymore.
Right.
You know, I was
and how old were
heavily.
You then?
I was 23 at the time when I came to the realization. I was drinking heavily. I had dropped out of junior college. My mom and I have this argument all the time. I say, I had 4.5 freshman years in a junior college. My mom says, well, you didn't really have 4.5 freshman years. I said, well, Mom, I paid for 4.5 freshman years in junior college. You're right. I didn't go to many of my classes.
Right.
And that's why I had them, you know. But, but it just goes to show you the type of person I was. I kept paying for college even though I wasn't finishing it.
Right.
It's just different. That's all it is. It's just different.
The last time that we talked was a couple weeks ago. Well, it was actually Memorial Day. And
yes,
you
ma'am.
Had talked about some of the things that had changed about you, yourself, your attitudes when you had gone into the service, and how it really did make a big difference in your life. And I'm not here to make people sign up to go into the service, but we do have all volunteer Army, Navy now. How do you think that changes the people that are deciding to serve our country?
They want to be there.
Well, that's the first thing, right?
Yeah, that's actually really the most important thing too, I believe. You have an all-volunteer military service. That means that those people that are coming in are wanting to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And that want and that eagerness is a deciding factor, and that's one of the things that makes our armed forces today as good as they are.
Mm-hmm.
The training has always been there. You know, I can't say that we get any better training or any less training than any time else in history. I mean, warfare changes over history, so you can't really make a fair comparison with that. But take Vietnam, for instance. You had a lot of draftees. Draftees, not all of them wanted to be there. And because they didn't want to be there, they had a poor attitude about their service. And that reflects in the job that you do. You know, when you have an all-volunteer military force, those guys and gals want to be there. And that reflects in their attitude. And when it reflects in their attitude, it reflects in their performance.
Right. And I think that I've seen a real difference in the strides that we've made. I mean, now, of course, you know, I am just part of the public, and I get given the information that the government wants me to see, good and bad. But like the Osama bin Laden thing, you know, the toppling of Qassam, that people are really excited and getting things done. Is that really true? Are things changing for the better?
Yeah, it's, you know, we're working as fast as we can.
Yeah.
You know, are things changing for the better? It comes down to recruiting. It's a numbers issue. You know, right now you see what's going on in the Middle East and with this ISIS group and things like this, and they're recruiting at rapid levels. It's going back and forth as to who's on top, who's on bottom. I mean, Syria's been in conflict for how many years now? And, you know, we left Iraq, and then the ISIS spillover into Iraq, and Iraq themselves, in my personal opinion, have not done a very good job of standing up for themselves.
No, and of course, we've gotten this warning about this weekend that they're planning a big attack somewhere. I know we're on high alert about that. When we hear those things, should we really be scared? As much as I get scared. I got to admit.
I'll tell you what, you let them win when you're scared. That's what terrorism is.
Okay.
You know, I don't get scared, and I don't get scared because I realize if I'm scared, if I'm living my life scared, if I'm altering my life because of what they're doing, because of what they're threatening, then they're winning.
Well, that's what they said after 9/11. That's what they wanted us to do, was to be scared.
You know, we're America. When's the last time we backed down from a fight?
Exactly. You're right about that. Spoken like a true Marine, that's for sure.
You know? Yeah. I mean, there's a reason why Americans have a reputation around the world for being as bravado as we are.
Right.
We don't scare easy. I just returned from Texas last night. And, you know, you go out to Texas and wow. Just think if ISIS tried to take Texas.
You know, don't mess with Texas. ISIS tried to take Texas. You know, funny.
It's just an interesting thing. I mean, you look at America and you look at Americans and how much we don't take trash.
Right.
Very well. You know, we don't take trash and most of us don't back down.
Right. Well, we talked about the last time that we really wanted to talk about, it's 4th of July, the history of this country, the history of warfare. Do you think being involved in warfare, having a family history of warfare, is warfare just necessary?
That's a very good question. Because every part of me wants to say no, it
me
is not
too.
Necessary. But at the end of the day, aren't necessarily fighting an enemy that's like us. We're fighting an enemy that's more violent. We're fighting an enemy that wants to fight. If they want to fight, then we have to take the fight to them.
Right.
We can't stand there and say, look, we understand you guys want to kill us, but let's talk it out.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that doesn't work. You need open minds to talk things out. And unfortunately, those that are inimical to us don't have open minds.
Is there anything that we can do as just normal citizens to change the way things are going as far as in the Middle East, ISIS, the war, besides cutting funding, which I personally, as much as I hate to spend money on warfare, I think is very dangerous to cut the funding.
The question in my mind comes down to how much of a role do we want to play in the peacemaking process overseas?
Okay.
All right. What you just start. You know, I do this Socratically, so to speak. You just start asking questions. You know, what benefit do we get from going over there and inserting ourselves into a fight that really not necessarily is ours?
And I keep hearing it's oil.
Well, okay.
Okay.
It's oil. Well, you know, they've been saying that forever, right?
Right.
You know, ever since gas prices went up. And you notice if we're winning all this oil-rich land, gas prices aren't going down, down, down.
Well, no.
I'm not paying 99 cents a gallon anymore.
Mm-mm.
And I never will again.
Right.
You know, like I was saying, it's how much of a role do we want to play in that peacemaking process? And, you know, at the end of the day, is what's going on in the Middle East affecting us at a great level? In our daily lives, no.
Mm-hmm.
Not at all. But there's national defense to worry about. There's the future to worry about. You know, if an inimical force like that gets stronger and stronger and stronger and starts gaining natural resources and various things and starts developing weapons systems, starts developing militaries. You know, right now they're just a band of ragtag freedom fighters. You know, what did Ronald Reagan say? One man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter.
Right.
You know, we have to keep that in mind. We label them terrorists. To them, they're fighting for themselves.
And I wonder about that because I was even thinking about the Boston Tea Party, the historical Boston Tea Party, and that at the time they were terrorists. And now, of course,
historical note on the Boston Tea Party.
Okay.
Right? They dressed up like Indians so that they would not be discovered.
Ah.
All right. And there was only one lock broken in the entire thing. And they sent a note and money to pay for the lock. The Boston Tea Party was not an act of terrorism. The Boston Tea Party was a demonstration.
And what differentiates that? The killing of people?
Nobody died.
Well, that's what I mean.
Nobody
what differentiates the difference?
Nobody was scared.
Yeah, well, is that the difference between a terror situation and, as you say, a civil disobedience?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it was nonviolent.
Right.
Right? The only thing it really did was destroy the tea.
Right.
Was it? Like, they even paid for the one lock they broke. They did it in the middle of the night. They didn't hurt anybody. Their intention was not to scare anybody. Their intention was not to make Great Britain live in fear of the colonists. Their intention was to show their unrest, was to show how they did not feel that they were being treated properly.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't like the taxes that were being levied on them without representation, things like that.
Right.
Now, if they would have gone in and slaughtered the crew and burnt the ship, Right. Yeah, that's an act of terrorism.
Right, exactly.
You know, and this is my personal opinion, but I think that's the difference. When you use the word terrorism, you have to imagine, what is the definition of terrorism? The definition of terrorism is to inflict terror on another person.
Fear.
Mm-hmm. Boston Tea Party did not do that.
Let's talk about war, you know, in other ways. It seems like every generation has its way. Well, and, you know, we talked the last time about war and terrorism and the history of war. Will it ever stop? Is there really ever a diplomatic way to get people to understand things? Or are we just a warring species? War is part of our history.
We're animals.
Yeah, we are.
We like to think we're not, mm-hmm. but we're animals.
Right.
You know, and animals will fight for natural resources, they'll fight for water, they'll fight for food, you know, and basically, you know, the largest thing I ever fought over in history is water.
Right.
You know, when you think about this whole idea, can we ever end warfare? In my opinion, no, mm-hmm. we can't, you know, because even if we could, there will be an instance where we will be attacked and we will need to defend ourselves.
Right. Even if you've got the resource, you've got to hold on to it.
Exactly. And you have to defend it. Mm-hmm. You know, and one of the greatest resources I find in America is freedom. You know, that's our greatest resource we have in the United States, liberty.
Mm-hmm.
Some people in the U.S. will try to tell you, well, you're not actually free or you don't really have liberty. And, you know, we have oppressed people in this country. And, yeah, we do. And, yeah, we've got homeless people in this country and we got people that are hungry in this country and things like that. I mean, if we want to worry about stopping something, let's worry about those things.
Right.
You know, warfare is something that we will always have, whether we want it or not, mm-hmm. you know. I don't like it. You know, I can remember before I went in and as a kid and growing up in a family watching the movie Platoon and Full Metal Jacket and the boys from Company C and just mm-hmm. thinking how awesome that was and everything. And then you find yourself face down on a dirt road stuck in an L-shaped ambush when you're penned down by machine gun fire coming from two different directions. And you're like, where is the glory in this?
Yeah, I'm not having very much you fun know? Now. Yeah.
I am scared. I'm concentrating on not peeing on myself, you know? It's basically what it comes down to.
Oh, I can imagine. And I wondered if that was just me and that's a question I wanted to ask somebody, especially somebody who has been through the things that you have. Were you scared? And I think that's sometimes hard for men to admit.
I've never been more scared in my life.
I bet.
Yeah. I mean, it is not easy to figure out where the fire is coming from, point yourself in that direction, and then close that distance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, that is something that takes special individuals. That's why we have military training. And when you want an all-volunteer military force, you better have one.
Right.
Because those guys want to do that stuff. You know, we're not going to run. It is one of those things we were talking about. You know, is there any glory in war? There's not. We need defense. We need defense. We don't need to go on the attack. That's not what we're about in this country, I don't believe. But there will always be people out there that will want what we have and are willing to take it by all means necessary.
Right.
And no, with how many people? There's like 7 billion people in the world. How do you get 7 billion people to all accept peacefulness, to all accept nonviolence?
Right.
Statistically, it's impossible.
Right, right. So where do you see the state of the United States, the state of the military at this point? I mean, I know that you probably can't, you know, I know that you can't tell us any classified information that you may know, but
I don't know any.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Well, that's probably a good thing. Then you can't give anything away, can you?
Maybe I was a corporal.
But I mean, from the people that you talk to, I know last week we talked to several military men at the Palmacia Country Club. And do you see that that we are a strong military? Are we in good shape? Should we, as American citizens, feel like we're on the right track? Hard question.
It is a hard question because, these are things that there's the heart and then there's the mind and all of this.
Our military, then there's reality.
Yeah, our military is in great shape. Our military will always be in great shape. You know, in the Marine Corps, we're used to doing everything with nothing. you know, under budget. You know, we just historically have not had the resources. The Marine Corps has gotten more stuff in the last 15 years than I think they've gotten in the previous 40.
Wow.
Honestly. And just the way technology changes and the way warfare changes, I don't like the idea of shrinking our military force. I don't like the idea of the reduction in force that we've gone through in the last few years. But then again, there's that citizen part of me, not the warrior part of me, that says, something's got to give.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where can we make money? You know, we need to create money in the budget to help pay off the deficit. Is that in should we cut national defense? I don't think so. Not right now.
I don't think
not
so either.
Right now. I mean, you know, granted, you got ISIS over there, and we're doing a great job of taking the fight to them. We could do a better job of it.
If we had more money.
Well, you know, if we were to drop the leash.
And what does that mean?
Interesting story here.
Okay.
When I got married to my wife, we needed a bigger car. Because I had a guide dog, she had a son, and her little Nissan, whatever it was, mm-hmm. was not going to handle the job. We needed a larger car.
Right.
So we bought a small SUV, great car, loved it. We took her Altima in Richmond, Virginia, and we were going to just get a quote on it, because they buy your car if you want and everything. And we're talking to the salesman, and he's asking me about my service and everything. And he and I start having a conversation, and he said something to me that sparked interest in my brain. And he said, you know, the problem I see is that we made a mistake when we tried to civilize war.
Wow, what does that mean?
War is not a civilized function.
Uh-uh.
War is one person trying to kill another person.
Simple as that.
There's nothing civil in that.
Uh-uh.
You know, you look at the history of warfare over the history. I mean, what happened to slaughtering the entire population and salting the field so nothing will grow here again?
Right.
We don't want to do that, obviously, because that's not what our country's about. That's not what our founding fathers intended for us to do. But when you go into a place and you try to fight a war where you have limited damage to civilian infrastructure and where you have limited displacement of indigenous population and you don't want to destroy their natural resources, things like that, it draws us into these long wars that are very expensive wars.
And then we have to rebuild everything we destroyed on top of it.
There's no law out there that says we have to rebuild it.
But we do that as a country.
Because that's who we are in America.
Exactly.
You know, that's what makes us so great.
Right.
Honestly. If you really want to win a war, in my personal opinion, you got to bring the fight to the enemy. And that is going to require a lot of collateral damage that we just don't want to do.
Right.
You know, we, and I mean me with that, we don't necessarily have the stomach for going in and wiping out an entire city just because we know there's 40 bad guys in it.
Well, and that's what I was thinking about dropping the hydrogen bomb that we destroyed, you know, that whole city. And we won the war, but...
Yeah, we dropped the hydrogen bomb not necessarily to win the war against the Japanese. We dropped the hydrogen bomb to show Joseph Stalin that we had the bomb and he better stop where he is and not take the rest of Europe.
But we still destroyed an entire city.
And it's horrible. And, you know, they're still dealing with that. And they'll deal with it.
Exactly.
You know, what is it? It leaves residue for 1,000 years?
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
You know, we're the only country to ever have ever done that. You know, and it put us on the map. We were already on the map, but I mean, it really put us on the map.
Right.
And it made us different than anyone else. And you look what has happened since.
Mm-hmm.
Nuclear proliferation is not necessarily a great thing. We now have the capability as a global presence to eliminate this planet. That's not a good thing.
For anybody.
Exactly.
For anybody.
Not a good thing. You know, I mean, wait, you remember the 1980s, you remember the 1970s and the 50s and the 60s. I mean, mutual assured destruction, that's a defense plan.
Yeah. Everybody dies, nobody gets to live. None of us get any of it.
You're right.
Yeah.
You're right. And
we're not smart, are we? We're really not.
we're highly intelligent.
Yeah.
We're highly intelligent when we want to be.
Right. We're intelligent, but not very smart. So,
you know, and I think a lot of this comes from, and you know, we talk about warfare, and we talk about warfare through history, and we talk about can we eliminate it, things like that.
Right.
It really goes to different cultures, mm-hmm. different populations in different areas of the world, different religions. We're too different to get along on a global scale.
Right.
We're just too different to get along on a global scale, and I think that's one of the main reasons we have warfare.
Right. I agree with you.
Are we to become one solid indigenous population across the globe? We're all one-minded, all like-thinking. That doesn't sound like a fun place for me to live.
Well, it's not humanity, that's for sure.
Right.
Yeah. It's really never going to happen, is it?
Well, if you're not chasing a dream, then what are you chasing?
Yeah, exactly. So we're sitting in 4th of July weekend, and how do you celebrate? I mean, is it any different for the, are you just an average red-blooded American guy that wants a hot dog, hamburger, and a couple beers, or do you guys in your platoon or whatever get together and have any special ways of celebrating?
We don't necessarily have any special ways of celebrating.
Mm-hmm.
I can remember an awesome 4th of July in 2007. I hooked up with a couple of buddies of mine that I served with, and we drove down to Jacksonville, North Carolina to Camp Lejeune to visit one of our buddies who had just returned from a MEU, a Marine Expeditionary Unit. They basically spent 6 months floating around doing like training operations all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a lot of fun because me and my buddy Murphy had some demolitions training in the Marine Corps, and we were able to make our own fireworks, which was a good time.
Oh my gosh.
You know?
Just the idea of that scares me.
It scares me now too, now that I'm older and more mature and realize that I like all my fingers
right.
on my hand, you know?
Right, exactly.
But, you know, for me, 4th of July, I love 4th of July. Really and truly, I do. It's an awesome holiday because for me, 4th of July is the day we stood up and said, no more. We will not stand for this anymore.
Right.
We are going to take this, and we want this to be our way. We want to be represented. We want, and we took. What do I do on 4th of July? Actually, I hang around in the house, okay. Hang out with my buddies, stuff like that. We will either smoke a ham or grill some hot dogs and hamburgers. There is some adult carbonated beverages that are consumed. I will admit that.
Yes. Yes.
You know, but for us, it's a lot of my friends are veterans. So we all call each other and we, you know, how you doing? Just wanted to say hi. It's a moment for me. It's a moment of memory. It's a
right.
moment of looking back, and especially with my family history, I can sit back and I can say, you know, I've actually got two great uncles. I mean, a lot of great uncles, a lot of greats in that, but
right.
That signed the Declaration of Independence.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow, I didn't realize that.
Yes, ma'am. When I think of the 4th of July, I think of my family.
Your
and
history.
I think of all the sacrifices
mm-hmm.
my family has made for this country. Because even if you do a full career in the military and you don't even see combat, you're still making massive sacrifices because it is a lifestyle. You know, you're not in one place for 20 years in your military career. You're moving around every few years.
Right.
You know, you're moving jobs. You're picking up your family. You're displacing your kids. You're finding new schools, all of that stuff. It is difficult to do. By the time I got out of junior high school, I had lived in St. Petersburg, Florida. I had moved from there to Hanau, Germany, right outside of Frankfurt, West Germany. I had moved from there to Lawton, Oklahoma, and moved from there to DeRidder, Louisiana, Leesville area where Fort Polk is. From there, I moved to Roswell, New Mexico, back to Fort Polk, Louisiana. And then my father retired, and we moved back to St. Petersburg, Florida, and I finished junior high school.
Amazing.
That was by the time I was 14 years of age.
And I never thought about that. Even if you don't see combat, how much of a sacrifice that you really have made to our country and really how we
not
really
just
need to salute the people who do that every single day and spend their whole lives doing that.
Exactly. I agree 100%. You know, having grown up in that lifestyle, having grown up in that family that I have, I can realize that. And I wonder if other people realize that even in a time of peace, our military sacrifices greatly, their families sacrifice greatly. You know, in the United States Marine Corps, you know what the toughest job in the Marine Corps is? Mm-hmm. Being a Marine spouse.
You're right about that. And I'm glad that you said that.
That is the toughest job in the Marine, and it's the toughest job in any service. It's the toughest job in the Army. It's the toughest job in the Navy. It's the toughest job in the Marine Corps. You know, it's the toughest job in the Air Force, even in the Coast Guard.
Yeah.
Being that spouse, male or female, when your warrior has to pick up and go, you're left holding the reins.
Every rein.
Yes.
I'm so glad that you pointed that out. I'm going to ask you one last question today. I bought dinner or lunch or military people. And sometimes I feel, I don't know, like I'm doing something kind of corny. What's the best way to thank a military man or woman?
And just say thank you.
Okay.
One of the things I love to hear is when people walk up to me and say, you know, I really appreciate what you did for me. I got a buddy, I'll just let you in on this real quick. My buddy Jake out in Texas, he's got this great reply when people walk up to him. Jake got, it's easy to tell, he's got a prosthetic leg and a lot of scars. But when people walk up and say, thank you for your service, he turns to him and he smiles and he goes, not a problem, you're worth it.
Oh, wow. What a neat thing to say.
Yeah.
That's cool. So, Very cool. Well, Mike,
we are worth it.
Another great conversation. So can I say to you today, thank you for your service. Thank you for what you did for me.
Not a problem. You're worth it.
Mike Jernigan's been my guest again this morning on Sunday morning. Have a great 4th of July.